Hey, it's me. I'm Nick. Welcome back. You're listening to A Certain Degree. On this episode, very special guest Kendall Asbury joins me in the studio. She is an amazing local journalist, just graduated from UCF and looking for a job, by the way. We talk about the growth in the Mills 50 district, pop-up cafes, especially coffee, because we both love coffee, and, you know, AI data centers, because we can't stay away from that. It's a fun conversation about local news coverage and much more. Enjoy. And we are back. Good morning. My name is Nick. You're listening to A Certain Degree on WPRK, Winter Park, Florida, the best radio station that ever has been and ever will be. I can say that because I've been a DJ on two radio stations, and I've listened to dozens more.
Right.
So I'm an expert.
So that gives you the expert.
Kendall Asbury is here. Good morning, Kendall.
Good morning, Nick. I'm so excited to be here and spend the morning with you.
Oh, yeah. Well, an hour.
The morning.
Yeah, that's the morning. And then we're obviously on to the workday.
Exactly.
Okay, great. Speaking of the workday, we've known each other for quite a while now. You started out as an intern for the community paper where I got to work with you.
3 years ago.
3 years ago.
Yes.
You were our editorial coordinator for a while. You've taken on a lot of responsibilities around town with local outlets,
yeah,
ranging from Central Florida Public Media to the community paper to the Orlando Business Journal. And yeah, That's where you are right now.
Yeah. So I've been at the Orlando Business Journal since January, actually.
So. Yeah. Yeah. So serving sort of two internships there, one from UCF and one, mm-hmm, a special one over the summer from the Dow Jones Initiative?
Yeah, the Dow Jones News Fund.
So. News Fund.
Yep.
Thank you.
Close enough.
Yeah, it's in the general ballpark. I knew Dow. I knew Jones. I didn't know the rest. So that's the most important thing. As a journalist, I like to get at least two of the four words
right,
correct.
You don't need to be entirely accurate, right?
But Kendall just graduated from UCF, had a very storied career there, is much admired by all of the people that she has worked with while she was there. I'm going to say nice things about
you. Oh,
you're
too
nice. Is that cool?
I was not ready for this.
You can't tell. She's turning red right now. It's perfect. But over the course of the last 6 months, and especially the last 3 months working at OBJ, you've covered some really good stories.
Yeah.
And I wanted to talk about a few of them. And, you know, one of the things I like to talk about when it comes to local journalism is why local journalism matters. And I think rather than talk about this in sort of the broadest sense, like the 30,000-foot view of, okay, local journalism matters because we hold people accountable, mm-hmm, and we make sure that people know what's going on in their community, et cetera, we just talk about some of the stories because I think that emphasizes why local journalism, yeah, matters, especially some of these stories that I picked out. I mean, there's dozens of stories. You can go to the Orlando Business Journal or bizjournals.com/Orlando and look at all of Kendall's stories. You can also follow her on Instagram at Words by Kendall. That's one L. And you can look at all the stories that she's covered. But dozens of stories, but I just picked out a few that I wanted to talk to you about. So if that's okay with you.
Absolutely.
I don't know why I'm asking permission because we've already talked about this.
Yeah, exactly. We already kind of went over it. And
yeah,
it seems like you picked my favorites first, so I'm ready whenever you are.
Okay, great. Well, one of the ones I wanted to talk about is you wrote about Mills 50.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden this is a sort of it's a pretty big boom. Like I know, normally we would say like five or six new businesses.
No.
That's a little bit of a, you know, like a micro boom, mm-hmm, or that's a pretty big trend, but this is more than 20 businesses opening in Mills 50. You can tell it was a really good story because it got picked up without too much accreditation to you by other outlets.
Yeah.
Not going to name any names. But I think that there's a couple of things here, and one that I just wanted to compliment, mm-hmm, you on, which I always knew about you, is you probably saw this. You probably saw a couple of these. Okay, this is going in. Picket Fence Bakery is doing something.
Yeah.
There's these two new spots here. Hang on a second. How many of these are there?
How many new places are we getting? And I think a lot of it was just walking around in Mills.
Yeah.
And I was like, I've never seen this before. Oh, this is coming soon. Oh, wait, there's like five new ones.
Yeah.
Let's actually count. And there's actually more than 20. So.
Yeah. And so you covered all of that. Did it make you hungry thinking about some of the new restaurants, especially that are coming in?
Oh, absolutely. I was like, how can I budget to try all of these? Because There are too many.
OBJ needs to just give you
I need an allowance or something like that.
Yeah, a per diem to try at all the new restaurants. I think that's also an interesting component and a bigger story here for Mills 50 is I know the city tends to call it the new downtown, right? The city of Orlando. Mm-hmm. This is where people are going. It seems like this is where people are going instead of going downtown because the draw is such that you have such a variety of different things, mm-hmm. almost like you would see in a downtown, right?
Yeah, and a lot of the – it seems like a lot of businesses are actually leaving the downtown central business mm-hmm. district and moving – or not moving to Mills 50, but you see a lot of movement into Mills 50. So its walkability and, like, charm and its legacy, essentially – of having all these different businesses has really made it a hot spot in Orlando.
I know one of the things we've talked about when it comes to Mills 50, the challenge is parking. Mm. I've never really had that much of an issue. I don't mind parking on a street. I don't mind like walking a little bit and making sure that I'm parking in the right way and, you know, not doing anything untoward once I get back to my car, which I think one of the complaints of some of the people who live over there. But so, you know, this expansion, a lot of times they're giving parking their dispensations, right? They're not – you can open a business and ask for – usually you would have to have a certain number of parking spaces. A lot of these businesses are saying, hey, is it okay if I open without this?
Oh,
and the
I
city
actually
is
that.
Yeah, the city is giving them – those dispensations. So they might do some valet or they might work some stuff around. So that's one of the big complaints, I think, around there right now is parking.
They're actually building a parking garage on Woodward Street.
They have gotten
said that they're going to.
They have gotten through some of it. There are some people who are opposed to it, but it's off of Mills.
Yeah.
I think it'd be very good. Yes, construction always causes some trouble in terms of entrance to businesses and some other things. But the businesses that are in, I was just talking to the owner of Create Coffee, who is located, his first location is there. And he was saying that he might look for a pop-up somewhere else because there's going to be retail again. And the person who is building it out has promised him a space there.
Oh, okay. Because I was actually curious about that because I saw the renderings and that there were going to be retail
on the retail
first floor.
Yeah.
And one of them was a coffee shop. And I was like, well, hopefully Create can just stay there.
Create, and that's the plan right now. I talked to him the other day. And so I know Ming's has already moved out.
Yes. They're like,
and there's a couple of other businesses there that I would imagine have to move out and might have been offered the same opportunity, right? And so, yeah, but I think that's 400 plus spaces. Yeah. I think that's a necessity over there if they're going to continue growing.
Yeah,
like that.
So many people want to go over there. And sometimes people, I've heard that a lot of people will have to search for parking for quite a bit.
Yeah. As far as like looking for those trends, you're plugged in over at OBJ. So you have a great newsroom. You've got these incredible writers over there and a wonderful editor. And you're looking around and you're talking to people there. What else, like, as far as your other experiences go, like, do you just read every local publication? Are you mentioned going out there and just walking around.
Yeah.
Like, how do you find these stories sometimes? Because I find myself, I think, a little over-reliant on Instagram.
Yeah.
And so I'm just scrolling through. Oh, that looks kind of interesting. Let me send it to myself and maybe I'll find that a little bit later and see if there's something on there. But what other things are you doing to find these stories?
Yeah, I think a lot of times it is going to the places that I know that I'm going to be covering and walking around. In Mills, I spent like several hours walking around and I was like, it was really hot and then it started raining and I was like, oh, this is perfect Florida weather. So I spent a lot of time walking around just to see. Also talking to people, I think something that OBJ has really done well for me is like learning how to more connect with people. And I know I've done this in several other past roles too, but the relationships that I've formed with sources at OBJ have been really great because they'll always send me stuff or they'll always keep me in the loop as to what's happening. But like you, I also like to turn to social media a lot of times. I think one of my favorites and one of the best resources for this story was Orlando Asian Foodies, the Facebook group.
Yep.
They are so attentive to what's going on in Orlando and I got a lot of leads from them. They were like, oh, like, look at this construction here. I wonder what's going there. So I would take the address and I would look at Orange County records and be like, oh, this is actually going to be a restaurant, guys. So that was something that was really helpful, is kind of relying on the community as we're talking about, whatever form that may look like, whether it's an in-person meeting or you're reaching out to people via social media. Because like you said, that's how a lot of people connect these days. And it's been a really helpful resource for journalists. But I also think just making a point to talk to people who are either local business owners or constituents of these areas and kind of might have an inside scoop on what's happening. Because a lot of times when you're dealing with business news, they're going to be more than happy to share it with you because they want the news to be spread about the new coming and growing.
Something's opening, something's being added, something's expanding. Yeah. And usually that's some pretty good news because you see a lot of people. I think the other side of social media, so it's a great research tool, but then it's also the outrage machine comes up when something is happening. There's change happening, whether that's something closing or something that might inconvenience somebody, and it explodes. And because of the algorithm, it explodes very widely.
I had some not so nice comments on my post about this story, actually. I think I did like a reel on it. And some people were not happy. I was like, guys, I'm sorry. I promise it's not my fault. I'm just telling you what's happening. Like,
right.
I don't know why it's me. Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
And they'll get angry at you. Speaking of trends and things, I think there's also like a natural passion that journalists have. Like sometimes we're covering stuff that we feel
okay about.
Neutral about, right? Like, and that's fine. But there's obviously going to be some things, and food, I think, is one of them for you. But another one is coffee. So
you were
our coffee correspondent over at the Orlando Business or at the community paper.
Yeah.
And you got to write a coffee-centric story over at OBJ, which I really liked because it's talking about all these pop-ups that are coming up, right? And so one of the things there is it's just sometimes easier cost wise to start there and then maybe look at a brick and mortar.
Right.
Right. And see if, you know, do a proof of concept, basically.
And sometimes, at least something that I found in my reporting is like, that's the entire business idea. Like some people don't have any inclination to go brick and mortar because they found that the business model works so well. And I think something that makes pop-ups really successful, especially coffee pop-ups, is that idea of scarcity, maybe. Like, this is only happening once a week or twice a week, so I'm going to make a point to go. I mean, it works on me, so I know if it works on me, and the lines are so long at these coffee shops that it has to be working. So I really like the fact that a lot of times these local cafes will partner with local businesses as well. They'll pop up at a local bookstore or a local grocery store.
Yeah,
exactly. And it's a beautiful partnership between some small businesses that kind of support each other. But for the sake of this story, it was so much fun because, as you know, I love coffee. And it was just so much fun to meet a bunch of people who are also passionate about coffee and are willing to take a risk and do these pop-up cafes that, like you said, don't have the overhead costs of having rent and having to do all this building permitting. But they also don't have the stability of having a permanent location.
Sure.
So they're really taking a risk because they love what they do. And that's something that makes, like, fuels my journalism. So
I was talking to Elliot Hillis, who owns Red Panda Noodle, along with his partner, Seth, and the Baba Yaga food truck. And what he was saying, so Red Panda Noodle is a permanent resident over at A La Carte downtown.
Yes, okay.
Right. So what he was saying is, I could pop up at a Tasty Takeover and make, you know, X number of dollars over 4 hours. Or I could be here, but I'm making the same amount of money, but I'm here all day.
Right.
Right. So he almost has that brick and mortar, whereas you can go. And I think as a pop up, if you gain the notoriety and do the things that I think some of them have done, like Zane's did, or Those Guys. Is that the name of it?
Yes, Those Guys Cafe.
Super popular, like lines around the block, you know, sort of things everywhere they go. I've never even had it because every time I've seen them somewhere, it's just been the line.
Yeah.
So you can make the same amount. It's just going to be more hours. Yeah. Whereas if you know you're going to pop up somewhere, it's 3-4 hours. and you're going to be busy the entire time.
Yes, and you're not going to get a break.
Right.
So it's successful in the fact that they're always busy. But again, like you said, it's kind of like it's a hustle.
It right? balances out. Yeah.
Which I feel like now's a good time to shout out that we have a bunch of coffee pop-ups this weekend that you definitely should check out. That you can find that all over social media. My personal favorite is Paperback Coffee.
I've heard good things about them. Yes,
and next week, actually, next Friday, they'll be in Winter Park. Mm-hmm. So that's where we are right now. They'll be on Park Avenue at Health Isol. But this week, they're going to be at Jet Set Pilates in Oviedo and in Waterford Lakes. So definitely check them out if you're interested.
I like that they're going to the Pilates place so you can do your Pilates and then have your very cold foam coffee.
Hey. It's coffee. It's good for you.
Yeah.
Did you see the study that people who drink coffee, like their liver is better?
You know who wrote that study?
Who?
People who drink coffee.
Oh, absolutely.
Let's turn to something that is a little more serious, but I also think not necessarily fully understood, which are data centers.
Oh, yeah. Right? This is an interesting turn. This is a complete 180.
So you wrote about the new facility that's going in, and it's kind of in already.
Yes.
Up in Eatonville. It's a company called Hostime. They've been working on this building. I've been passing it for
5 years.
At least 5 years. It feels like it was even longer in terms of getting the approvals and stuff, and but it's been under construction for quite a while. So even before we were started talking about AI data centers, so my understanding, having worked in the web development world for a bit, is that, you know, prior to this, data centers for the most part hosted websites, hosted files. You know, there's the, you see commercials every once in a while for Amazon Web Services. That's where they host big thing. Like, that's one of their main, Amazon's main profit lines is coming from just hosting stuff.
Right.
So you think about having to host all your photos on your phone and the backups and the website for, you know, not only the places that you like to go to, but the places that need to be up and running all the time. Mm-hmm. So Hostime has a number of facilities throughout Florida. And one of the reasons for that is that they do a lot of redundancies.
Yes.
Right. So they have backups of everything. So nothing goes down if it goes down for very long. So if one of these facilities goes down, they have backups somewhere else so the websites can still be reached.
Right. And sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no. That, I'm just going to say that's traditionally been my understanding of what data centers are up until 2 years ago when we started talking about these AI data centers.
Yeah, and I think that's something that is a little bit misunderstood about data centers. And believe me, I am not the personal biggest fan of AI, but I think something that is important to understand about data centers is they have been around for decades to do exactly what you're saying. They host information. They hold websites. I know for this one in Eatonville that's coming, it has been super controversial, but I did talk to the founder and he was talking about they do a lot of partnerships with local businesses, like also Advent Health stores a lot of their data and information there. When you make a phone call, when you send an email, that information has to go somewhere. So whatever company or service you're using, they probably have to store it in a data center.
Yeah.
But that being said, this data center that is coming is probably one of the largest in the area, and it is AI ready. So it does have the potential to host AI vendors, I guess would be a word for that. So it is AI ready and it can host AI, but that's not its entire purpose, if that makes sense. So.
Right. So I think there's two things with that. There's the electricity cost.
Yeah.
And when I say cost, I don't just mean the monetary cost, but the on the infrastructure around us, right? And like what that takes to do. And we have a coal burning plant. And is it,
that was one of the main concerns of the residents in Eatonville, because they weren't sure if, you know, their electricity bills would go up because of how much electricity that this data center was using and the toll that it would take on the local facilities. So that was one of the concerns for sure.
And then from an AI perspective, typically your traditional web hosting and storage facility data centers don't need the water that the AI data centers need. Right. And my understanding on that is that I always felt like, and I did a little research, I don't know if this is 100% true, but The research that I saw said that it's not water. Like, the idea is that water goes in and it doesn't come back out, or
Correct.
It comes back out in a way that you can't use it. So it's not being polluted. It's not being, like, it's not bad water. It's actually, they essentially mist everything in order to cool it off, and then it just goes into the environment.
Yes.
But it's still gone.
Right.
Right. So putting these data centers in, like, a desert area makes no sense because there's not enough water there.
Yeah, and that's why you don't see it in
right.
areas that are lacking water, which
yeah.
is a concern of a lot of Floridians, I think, because we're seeing a lot of data centers rush into our market because guess what? We're surrounded by water.
There's a lot of
and
water.
And we're on aquifers and we have
yeah.
a lot of lakes. So that has been a big concern because for a lot of data centers, it's like you're saying, they'll use millions of gallons of water a year and it just goes away because mm-hmm. of its use in cooling and how it's used.
So it doesn't go to waste. It doesn't get like it's not like chemicals leach into it or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
It just goes back out, but not in a usable way.
Correct.
Yeah.
And it does deplete that aspect of the natural resource. However, the facility in Hostheim, from my understanding, uses like a closed loop cycle. So they cool the water and they use it in a way that keeps it in the facility.
Okay.
So it's not a constant consumption of water, from my understanding, at least at this specific facility. But it's in like a loop system where they keep reusing the water and not evaporate it.
Right. So they still need to cool. Servers need to be cooled.
Exactly.
Right. There's a lot of electricity just to run them, but then there's the electricity to run the ACs.
And Google does that too.
That are cooling
you know, they
them
have
off.
To cool the internet servers.
Again, yeah. The internet has to be cooler than mm-hmm. it is. It would just be nice if it was, because right now it's not very cool. But yeah, so that's the idea behind it. But. You know, and I think that part, and I just want to say a couple of things about like the journalism part of this, mm-hmm. because I'm starting to feel, you know, certain ways about data centers. I'm sitting here kind of defending one.
Right.
Right. Because it is a necessary thing. And I'm not even talking about AI. I think there is some necessities there. I think we're going to become dependent on it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we're going to have to figure out how to cool them a little bit better or find other ways to offset
a more sustainable
the
way.
Cost. Put them at the bottom of the ocean. I don't know. Like, that's cold. It's cold down there, as far as I know. Put them in space.
Put them in Antarctica.
Yeah. Yeah.
You
just
know?
Don't melt the penguins. Have the penguins run them.
No. Well, there you go.
Penguins running around with little checklists. And
that's terrible.
Yeah, I
We're
love
gonna
that.
Put them to work?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. They need a job.
I don't think they do.
Well, they need to stay warm. Like, they all huddle during the really cold weather. They get huddled
They're
in the data center.
So cute. Oh, my. Oh, it would keep them warm. Oh, okay. I think
yeah,
you're onto something.
You're on board
why,
now.
Why do people and industry experts and politicians never think of things like this?
They're cut off from their imaginations.
Yeah. That's why
yeah.
we're journalists, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I did want to talk about, like, when you are looking at these stories mm-hmm. and you're trying to stay neutral in all this, but you're like, okay, well, wait a minute. Like,
yeah.
we are reacting, maybe overreacting
right.
to all of these things because, you know, we understand that AI might be bad, data centers might be bad, but there is a need for them. Like,
right.
they're not building this just for fun. Like,
mm-hmm.
they're not building this because they want to do. My understanding is with Hostheim is they like to build along really trafficked corridors. This was their and they've built many facilities like this. I think if you drive through South Florida, you find one or two of them there so that people see them and they might want to host their stuff with them.
Right.
Right. That
yeah,
was the
that
idea
true.
Behind it.
Yeah.
So I feel like there's while journalists are supposed to be neutral in all this, there is something to like writing in a way that shows, OK, maybe you think this way of data centers, but. Here's the reality of it, like trying
yeah.
to dispel myths and rumors.
I think this story in particular is a great example and a way to explore kind of that internal bias that we're talking about when it comes to journalism, because we are supposed to be neutral and we're supposed to give a voice to all sides of an argument and all sides of an issue. And despite how I may personally feel about AI, this story was interesting to me because I got to cover something that I was really passionate about, which is, you know, technology and the rise of AI and building data centers. And even though I might not personally like artificial intelligence, it was still important to me to be able to learn about this facility and explain it to people in a way that they understand. Because when I first started out on this story, I was like, oh, this follows the trend, a national trend of these data centers being built in historically low income or historically minority communities. And on the surface, it's like, oh, like, I can't believe this is happening in our own community. Like, what is going on? And then if you approach it with a way that you have a neutral outlook and you're being fair to everybody involved, if I didn't do that, I wouldn't have talked to the founder of the facility and learned that they host Advent Health. They host hospitals around here. They host local businesses. It's not just about AI, and it's not about like a systemic approach that is trying to take advantage of people, right? At least in this specific instance. They're simply trying to make it to where that they can host local organizations and data, because that's something that's been around for a while. So I think that when you approach it with that fair and open mind, you learn a lot more and you're able to kind of convey that information to readers, which was something that was important to me in the case of this story and how I approach my work in general.
Let's switch over and talk about AI and journalism. Mm. And, you know, one thing that scared me a little bit, I didn't realize how ubiquitous this had become in Google search.
Oh, right. Yes.
Like, Google search has started really pushing the AI overview as far as its results go. I think we've all had experiences where it's just been wrong.
Absolutely.
Like, it is pulling
totally
stuff.
Wrong.
Yeah, it's pulling stuff, and it is best guess, but really should be left up to.
Yeah.
And, you know, thinking about all the years I cared about SEO, search engine optimization, and trying to get on the rankings and page one and top three and all that, like, there's a very real chance that rankings and listings will maybe go away as far as search engines go, or at least maybe as Google goes. I don't know if maybe they'll keep it and you have to turn off the AI overview or you just, again, maybe it does get better. So I think that from a journalism standpoint, you know, we think about, okay, oh, we'll just use AI and we'll just use it to write stories. Right. And that's the least I'm concerned.
Yeah. And I don't think anyone is really looking at that. They don't think that's going to be successful.
There's some newsrooms. There's some things that are doing it, and that's fine. Right. And maybe there's an editor who's looking at that stuff. But for the most part, you're still going to trust content, I feel like, that's coming from a human.
Right.
And I think that New York Times, Central Florida Public Media, some other outlets have said, okay, we're using AI for zero.
Right.
Like, we're not even using it for meeting notes, which I think has become another ubiquitous sort of use of AI, whether it's on Zoom or, you know, what I use for transcriptions, which is a system called Otter.
Yes, that's been around forever.
Yeah,
and
it does
Grammarly,
a little.
Grammarly has always been AI, or like any spell check and grammar software is essentially being done by some sort of artificial intelligence.
So I think about that and I look at it and I go, okay, well, there are some spaces where AI could help me a bit, at least get started with research. Some of the copy that I don't particularly enjoy writing, like the search engine optimized overview for the meta description.
Gotcha.
Maybe with the social media post. I'm not great at writing those. So if AI helps me with that in some way, am I deceiving the readers? Am I using it in such a way, like taking away the idea that, okay, anytime I use AI, I'm killing the environment.
Yeah, you're using like two bottles of water.
Forget that for a second. But let's say that was taken care of and the environmental impact wasn't there. It is, but it, you know. Are there uses or ways that you could see using AI in an ethical manner as a journalist?
So in a vacuum, aside from all of the tangible consequences of using AI, I think that even though it might make some processes more efficient or more streamlined, I think that the most powerful journalism in all aspects, whether that is writing a social post, whether that's forming a newsletter, whether that's providing an overview of a story, I think the most effective and powerful, influential journalism will always come from a human. Mm-hmm. So I personally think that this is something that's been done for hundreds of years. Journalism is something that's been around for a while, and it's been serving its purpose and entirely successful without this technology. And personally, if it were up to me, I would keep it that way. And I would kind of refrain from using it in our everyday usage. But I do see the point that you're making about helping it, or helping you be more efficient in your day-to-day life and using it for the small things. And I think that as long as we're transparent in what we're doing, and we're putting disclaimers and being like, oh, well, this photo caption was generated with AI, or this summary was generated with AI, I think as long as we're being forthcoming to readers, I think that you're still managing it in an ethical way. Personally, I'll do everything in my power. I'll work later to get it done if it means I don't have to use AI.
Right, right.
But I totally understand. And I think that as long as we're being transparent, that's our main job as journalists.
It has become a little bit of a like GMO kind of, GMO is bad. Everything
right.
about it is bad because of the main reactions. Like you think about gene edited or things like that. But it's, you know, we've also done things where not editing genes, but growing crops in such a way that,
right.
the, you know, this type of...
They survive certain conditions.
Right, exactly.
They become closer to this type of fruit that we want.
Yeah. So I think that there's a reaction here that it is no AI, that it can't be. But to your point, if we have clear boundaries and we have an ability to document that and express that and say this is where we use it. But I can see where even that would cause somebody to go, okay, I don't trust you anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that if that happens,
the main concern.
It doesn't really matter.
I don't think that any 5 minutes saved in writing something is worth losing people's trust.
Yeah.
And when you bring back the tangible consequences into it, whether that's on the environment or on people, I just don't feel like it's worth it in my personal life and my professional usage. So
in your experience then, have you read anything that you felt like, oh, I can't trust this because it was somehow using AI or utilizing AI in such a way that you felt like was too much?
I don't think I've seen that much in the journalism sphere, unless it's like maybe an influencer or someone who's using it on social media. I think a lot of times maybe it's sources that I might be dealing with that they might use AI to craft maybe a statement, and I have to use discernment and being like, oh, is this actually from you, or is there going to be some untruth hidden in here that you're not even aware about? So I think that is maybe something that's concerning. Or if I'm going through a document, whether it's a court document or it's like a building permitting file, anything like that, I pay close attention to the writing to see if like it goes beyond the professional jargon and it's like actually maybe generated by some form of artificial intelligence, just so I'm taking the extra precaution to make sure I'm not integrating that into my own work because someone else used it to craft source.
You can see the little AI slop kind of telltale
yes.
pieces and parts. Yeah,
this is one of the most heartbreaking things because I am an avid MDASH user. Justice for the MDASH. First, the Oxford comma. I can't use that in journalism. But now the MDASH? Absolutely not.
Yeah, we might think you're AI.
Maybe that's why I hate AI so much.
Yeah.
Because it took the MDASH from me.
Look, Kendall, when we're reading your stuff and we can see the quality of it and everything else, we know that it's not AI.
You don't see the MDASH and automatically think, oh, she got tired and used ChatGPT today.
Actually, I will say you are like a machine in terms of the amount of content that you can turn out
and the
quality and everything else. But you are not AI.
I'm not AI.
Yeah. Unless we're both AI. Like this is.
And we don't know.
I mean, it's just radio,
simulation.
Right? Like, is there any kind of.
How do they know? How do the listeners know?
How do you know?
I'm trying to think of like my best AI voice.
Hello.
I don't have one.
Listener. Well, if the AI is good, then it'll just sound like a voice.
But it doesn't yet.
No.
It sounds like so
fake. It sounds terrible.
Yeah.
It sounds.
I don't even want to try because I'm just going to embarrass myself.
Yeah.
But.
Let's take a quick break.
Okay.
And we'll play a song and we'll come back and we'll talk a little bit more about maybe some events that are coming up, some other stories that Kendall has covered. You can find out more about Kendall at the Orlando Business Journal. That is bizjournals.com/Orlando. You can see a bunch of her stories there. And you can also, I encourage you to follow along with her on Instagram, words at, or their handle is at words by Kendall, and that's Kendall with one L. We're going to hear The Long Way Home from J.J. Gray and Mofro on WPRK Winter Park, Florida. You're listening to A Certain Degree.